In 2009, a group of Kevin Smith fans converged on Brantford, Ontario, Canada. Sent there to play hockey, they soon discovered their mission was full of hijinks, shenanigans, and a whole lot of beer and poutine. Having survived their first year in the Great White North, they return every year to continue the tradition. But in 2015, three of them decided to document their adventures, trials, and tribulations. If you have come to laugh, cry, or simply enjoy yourself at their expense, then you have come to the right place. You have come to Jim's Barbecue.
Hi, welcome to episode 31 of Jim's BBQ Podcast. I'm Mike.
I'm Jim.
And I'm Dylan.
And tonight we have a very special guest with us.
We have a returning guest.
A returning guest. All the way back, I don't know how many people have listened to this one, episode 3 of Jim's BBQ Podcast, we have Mr. Paul Saunders returning.
Hold on, motherfucker.
Hey, Paul.
How's it going?
It's going. Welcome back to Jim's BBQ Podcast.
We might sound like Paul Sanders or Saunders.
We might
Paul
sound Sanders. A lot different.
Come on, you didn't go Sanders.
I did. You gotta edit that out, dude.
No, I'll leave it in. I'll just bitch about it.
That just might be one of our famous Easter eggs. If you listen to any of the episodes, you might notice some bloopers and whatnot at the end of the episodes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now, my old boss's name was Sanders, and I was talking to him today at work. So,
was his first name Colonel?
No.
Was his first name Bernie?
Bernie.
Yeah, see, my dad, when I was younger playing hockey, he never played hockey because coming from England, nobody skated there, right? He played soccer and cricket and shit like that. But he wanted to help out, so he ended up being like team manager, collecting money and stuff. And everybody used to
call Daryl Clark of the team.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, everybody used to call him Colonel. So
yeah, yeah, nice.
So that's kind of funny. But yeah, I just tell everybody like the Colonel, but with a U. So.
Well, if you want to find out about our Colonel, you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/JimsBBQPod.
You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram if you punch in at JimsBBQPod.
You can also email us, since we actually finally did get a fucking email, which I'm sure we'll talk about later, at JimsBBQPod@gmail.com. Or
actually, I was just going to bring it up right here and then, since I mean we're plugging the email. We actually finally got an email from somebody that we called out. Our good friend and previous podcast guest, episode 29, E.T. the E-Man, actually sent the email that he promised us. So congratulations, E. You're off the hook.
Now, to be completely fair, I think he listened to 30 and was like, oh, fuck, I forgot about it. So I think we should.
Well, yeah, he's somewhat off the hook.
Yeah, I think he's still Sargy for not doing it like during the week before the episode came out. So,
well, he wouldn't have known that we called him out on 30.
I know, but he was supposed to just.
He was supposed to do it right after episode 29.
Right. See,
yeah.
So he had a little bit of Sarginess in there, but he did come through.
So if you want to hear about all the hijinks with E, where else can you find those episodes, Jim?
Oh, you can find them. You can find those fresh from the grill at www.jimsbbqpod.com under episodes. And if you're specifically looking for E-Man to be on there, it would be episode 30. Or no, yes, 30.
No,
episode 29.
Oh, jeez.
Pouring it hard, which yes. He so coined the phrase during it. So
don't forget, you can also rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. All right, Dylan, what are you drinking tonight?
I am drinking a St. Bernardus Triple.
Oh, wow.
And what's interesting about it is that this is on the back. Today is the last day that it should be aged.
Hmm.
August 26th of the year 2016.
Hmm.
And it's held up pretty good. Not as good as some of the pressure bottles. It's lacking a little bit in flavor, but overall pretty good.
Nice.
And there's quite a bit of shit floating around in it.
Ew.
Not literal.
Oh, boy. I don't know. Jim, what are you pouring down your gullet tonight?
I am back to my Sprecher's cream soda, my friend. It has a fine-ass smooth taste. Love it so much.
You know you do. Hey, Paul, you got anything tonight?
Just water.
Just water.
Yeah.
All right.
I did send you a picture of it.
Did you?
Yeah, just sent it.
Oh, there you go. I already did the upload.
That's all right.
Some of you might know, a whole crew of us are all going on a cruise together. So Dylan, Jim, Paul is also going, and Liz was chatting with us earlier tonight, and so I was drinking some beers while we were doing that. And earlier tonight, truth be told, I'm not drinking anything now. I was drinking from Terrapin. I was drinking their Wake and Bake Coffee Oatmeal Imperial Stout, which is just amazingly delicious. The coffee and the oatmeal just are so present in it. The flavors are great. It's just a really freaking good beer. Really enjoyable.
It sounds good, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good one.
Probably better than my water.
So that's what I was drinking tonight, Dylan. Unfortunately, that was actually my third beer of the night as we were talking about the cruise and where we're headed and what we're doing on that and everything. So I'm probably going to go the rest of the night without another beer because I'm already feeling pretty good. But that's what I was drinking.
Yeah, so, I had one with dinner, but it's nothing worth mentioning.
So clearing out that natty light, Paul?
No, it's kind of a funny story. It'll take about 10 seconds. It's one of Dylan's favorites, Blue Moon.
Oh. yeah.
But over here, we have Labatt Blue. Since Blue Moon is basically a Molson Coors product, Labatt has copywritten every use of the word blue for beer, so they actually have to call it Belgian Moon here. It's the same swill, but they can't call it Blue Moon. The logo's the same, everything, but it's
I remember you telling me that when we were in Jersey.
Yeah.
I'm totally digging your Windsor Rock Gym thing. How's that going? I seen your picture with the taped up fingers and that.
Yeah, I've been going like 3 times a week and loving every second of it.
Pretty fun, huh?
Oh, yeah. I bought my own shoes today, so I don't have to rent them.
Oh, awesome.
It's pretty cool. Every time I go, I progress, which is kind of neat. So, but yeah, everybody in there's really, really cool. It's not your typical gym. Like, you get a really good workout because, like, you're hauling your own body all over the place. But it's such a social thing, too. Like, people are helping each other out. Hey, try this. Because it's not just you climb up a wall and get to the top. You actually have to follow a specified path. And even though there's multiple holds, you don't necessarily use all of them to follow that path. And it's about puzzle solving and different moves to try different things. It's pretty neat. So it's a good fun way to keep fit.
Very cool.
So, like, as I kind of mentioned, Paul was a guest early on in the life of this podcast that we're doing. And if any of you have listened to episode 3, you might recall that it ended rather abruptly. Like, I actually put a tag dead at the end where we lost, like, I don't even know how much audio we had recorded at this, or like at the point after we lost it, but it just ended. And Paul had told this really great story about a band, and it was unfortunate because that was part of what we lost. But since we knew we were going to have him on again, we kind of thought that it would be a great story for him to tell anyway, because it doesn't have really any like time relation to it. But we thought it was something that was kind of interesting and fun. So without further ado, I think we just want to have Paul tell his story.
That's my cue. Actually, we're coming up on the anniversary. It was...
What, do you, like, celebrate that? I mean, do you...
No.
Do you get, like, cakes and flowers and shit for the band? I mean...
No.
He listens to every single release of their discography.
No, I was more or less just... It's almost 11 months to the day, so I was just more like a time thing. So
he actually listens to like I Will Remember You by like Sarah McLachlan when it comes up.
No, you can't watch that because here it's always you probably have the same commercials where they talk about like Humane Society and stuff. Every time I hear that song now, it's just too depressing. But, anyway, we're digressing here.
Oh, that's what we do.
This is true. Tangent should be like a parenthetical title to the podcast, right? About a year ago, one of my all-time favorite bands, probably number 2 or 3 on my list, was an opening act for the Scorpions, and they were playing at here in Windsor. We have a Caesars Casino with a pretty good auditorium. They get some pretty big names in. Alice Cooper / Billy Idol, Duran Duran, even Tom Jones is coming like sometime this year. So they get good diverse acts, and it's a pretty good venue to go see shit. And about 3 or 4 months before the show, I'd gotten a pre-sale thing and bought like great tickets. I'd fourth row, myself and a friend were going to go. It's like, I got these great seats, like we're right up front. And about 2 months before the show starts, I see a VIP announcement. So I shoot my buddy an email. And I'm like, they got this VIP. It's a meet and greet. It's $150 US add on to the ticket. You get a t-shirt, bunch of swag, I think drumstick, a bag, guitar picks, a couple other things, and like a signed picture with them, and you get to meet the band. I said, I'm going to do it. Whether you do or not, it's entirely up to you. I'm just telling you right now, I'm going to do it. So what do you think? And he's like, yeah, why not? What the hell? So get online, grab the VIP things, and he said, we'll email you a day or two before. So like the day before the show, I get an email from them, and they're like, you need to meet at the box office about 4:30, I think it was. We'll assemble there and get you your stuff and the details. So we get down there, probably about 4:30. The instructions were a little vague considering the venue, because the box office is actually nowhere near the theater. So we figure we'll just get in, make sure we're in the right spot. Ultimately, we end up at the merch table. That's where we find a guy setting up their stuff. And I said, we're here for the VIP. He goes, yep. He goes, just have a seat over there. He goes, what size shirts do you guys want? I'll call the tour manager. He'll come down and get everybody.
Paul went with children small.
Men's. Close. He goes, but we'll get the tour manager down. He'll come grab everybody when the band's ready. So we kind of walk over. They got these nice lounge chairs. We're sitting there just shooting shit. Dude comes over later, like 15 minutes maybe, hands us our shirt and our drawstring bags. And he says, I just talked to, can't remember the dude's name. He goes, but he'll be here in a couple of minutes. He'll take you guys down. So true to his word, like 2-3 minutes later, this guy rolls up and he's like, hey, you guys, my meet and greets. Or my VIPs. I'm like, yep. He goes, all right, follow me. So we get up and we're walking towards one of the elevators. I'm like, so where's everybody else? And he's like, you're it. And we're like, what? He goes, nope, just you two. I'm like, nobody else. He goes, nope, that's it. I'm like, holy shit. So he takes us, down this elevator. We walk into the auditorium through a curtain, go right past the stage. So we're seeing everybody rig everything up and get everything ready. Go back up another elevator, and we're in like a they have some ballrooms and meeting rooms that are above the theater in the casino. And he takes us into this room, and there's the five guys from the band. I guess they have a social media person. And she was sitting there just writing some stuff up, probably on either Facebook or on their Twitter account. And it was kind of cool. We spent like half an hour just shooting the shit. And my friend Gord, like, we've been going to shows since, mid 80s, probably it's like 15, 16 years old. And, he kept apologizing to them. He was like, oh, dear, it's so embarrassing. Like, nobody in this town. And, I agreed with him. It was largely embarrassing, but like the fan in me was just so freaking selfish about it too. And I even said that to him. I'm like, I agree with him, but you know what? This is pretty damn cool. We get to just.
That's like so Canadian of him.
We had to apologize. No shit.
So sorry, eh?
Yeah, sorry. Oh, sorry.
But no, it was so cool. Like, and there's like three original members from these guys have been together. So it's like 1984. So we're like what, 32 years now. Three original members. They have a new singer who's just absolutely phenomenal. I think he breathe some new life into the band, and one of the original guitarists, he didn't so much quit as just retired. I think he wanted to go on and do other things. So the guy that got replaced him, who was a young fan, a guy named Parker, he he knew like every solo from like the guy who left, plus Mike, the guy who's still in the band. And so they just kind of hired him, and it was just a really neat experience. We're just, you know, I think one of them said to us, you guys are obviously like concert buddies. And yeah, how'd you guess? You know, and they said, well, you know, who else have you seen, or what shows have you seen? And that's kind of all it turned out to be. It was just like seven guys standing around talking about shows we saw. You know, it's like you go into these things and it's like, you know, what are you going to say to these people? Like my expectation was, like, the last time I did a meet and greet, I think it was with Scott Ian. He was doing like a spoken word thing, and I think it was like maybe 20 of us that went backstage after. And you know, you want to come up with that one gold question. You don't want to be the idiot who asks the, you know, who would win a fight question if it was like a comic book creator or something. Like, you just don't want to ask that dicky question. But like, what do you do for half an hour if like all you're expecting is to get the one question, right? It was just kind of weird. Like, you know, where do you direct this? But it was just neat that it became just an organic conversation. It wasn't like, hey, nice to meet you, love your stuff. It was, you know, what are you guys into? And they're from Seattle. A lot of good music's come from Seattle over decades. You know, so that obviously comes up in conversation. And my friend's not a big grunge fan. You know, he thinks it ruined hair metal. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. Even hair metal was on its way out at the time. Guns N' Roses had pretty much destroyed hair metal anyway, and they were pre-grunge. So, but you know, he sort of mentioned that, and I'm like, you know what? I kind of disagree. I'm like, you know, that some of my favorite bands came from that town. And, but if you take like the big four grunge bands, although two of them are arguably not grunge, they just happen to come out of it at the same time. Like, Alice in Chains and Soundgarden just still rock out. You know, I definitely put Alice in Chains in my top three. And you know, those guys dig that kind of music too. Like, they know them, they're, you know, from the same area. And so that's just kind of the way the conversation went. It was really, really cool. Like, totally unexpected. And, I don't know. It was just one of those really cool, you know, story for a lifetime experience, right? Like, you know, they're not super famous. Most people don't even know who the fuck they are, but like, being a huge fan, it was like, doesn't get much better, you know? It was like, Ed, their bass player, he had the best answer to my one question. And I'd said to him, like, if you could pick, you know, any song off of any of your albums, like, as your favorite, what would it be? And he said, like, the album hasn't been written yet, track 9. And so Gordon says to him, oh, so the next one? He goes, no, don't know. It's like, you know, it's just like, it's such a non-answer, right? And even after asking the question, I thought, yeah, that's kind of putting him on the spot too, right? You know, like,
yeah, you kind of also imagine how many times he's been asked that question.
Quite possibly too, yeah. It's like, I just thought it was a really cool answer though. I did say to them, I said, for what it's worth, I love the last album, but I really do. I almost always go back to Rage for Order. It's like one of my favorites. And I said, like, Screaming in Digital and I Dream in Infrared are just phenomenal songs. I will remember. Like, I really, really dig that album. And then Parker, the new guitar player, he pipes up. He goes, yeah, man. He goes, that's one of my favorites. He goes, and it's such a blast to play. I'm like, oh, do more, please. You know.
I was really blown away when we saw them at Rebellion.
Oh, Rebellion, yeah.
Yeah, like, they were fantastic. To that point, I was really impressed with the new singer. I got
Todd.
Yeah, I got the new album that come out.
Condition Human.
Yeah, yeah, I got it just a couple months back. And just,
yeah,
I've really been blown away by it. It's quite an amazing album.
Oh, I love I-9.
Yeah,
that's a freaking great song. Probably the one I listen to the most off of that. What's the other one? I can't think of the names now. Funnily enough, though, I have tickets to go see them again. They're coming back through this way in December. The VIP is available again, so I don't know if I'm going to do it or not. This show's in Detroit, so there may be more people. It's at a little bar, though.
This time, Paul's going to have lunch with the guys, you know.
Well, it's kind of funny because when we saw them at the Rebellion, Trevor and I stood in line to meet them, and Dylan, you got pictures with Parker and Ed, right?
I did, but that was like we were watching
Slash,
yeah. And they just waltz by, and I'm like, dude, that's Queensryche.
And you're actually, like, I think I pointed that out to you,
or whatever. So one of us did.
Yeah. I was like, those guys.
I did get a picture with the both of them.
Yeah, I went up to Ed because Parker was a little deeper into the crowd, and I'm like, hey, dude, do you mind? I'm like, sorry to bother you, but I'm a huge fan, and I just like, and 2 hours before, Trevor and I had gone through like the cattle line, right? Because it's one of those FYE meet and greet things, and it is, what do you say? They're signing your CD as you walk by, and it's like, hey, love your music. And I was already going. I already had the tickets for the September show, even though this was back in May. And I said, I've got tickets to see you guys in Windsor when you're up for the Scorpions. Can't wait. You know, looking forward to the show. And that's actually kind of what kicked off the concert conversation with them at the meet and greet. Because I said that to him. I said, you guys are never going to remember this, but I was in that Catalina. And then I said to Ed, I'm like, You guys were watching, you and Parker were up watching Slash and Miles Kennedy, and you know, we spoke for like 10 seconds, you took a picture together. I said, but when this opportunity came up, I'm absolutely going to jump on this. And that's when they said, well, do you go to a lot of shows? I'm like, gosh, since 1983, like, so there's a period in the 90s I haven't done many, but no, I went to see this, went to see that. I'm like, hey, I was at that tour, you know? And most of them, Mike, Ed, and Scott, the three original guys, they're like early 50s, I think, 51, 52. So they're only a couple of years older than me. So we went to all of the same shows, right? Even though, you know, they've been in a touring band since like 84, which would make like, they'd be like 19 maybe when it started. Maybe 20, yeah. Yeah, in 84, I was 17. So, it was such a cool conversation. It was like no rock star bullshit. Just, you know, hey, what do you guys like? What are you into? And, you know, really cool senses of humor. And just like, yeah, I went to that show. What'd you think about this? And, you know, and I think it was my maybe seventh or eighth time seeing them live. So,
I'm sure at this point, you could probably like sidle up to them and someone just be like, are you in the band? And they'd probably be like, yeah, he's in the band.
I don't know about that, but well,
he's my guitar guy. He's my guitar tech.
No, at this point, he just walks up and they go, Paul! It's like he's Norm at Cheers at this point.
Well, what was funny about it, it's a casino show, and at this particular casino, they're not a big fan of you like standing. And they don't let you rush the stage until like almost three quarters of the way through the final act if there's an opener. So we kind of warned them about that. We're like, you know, we're up front. We're like the fourth row. There's probably going to be nobody in front of us when you guys are on. And don't be bummed if nobody stands up because they don't like you standing up. They kind of make you sit down unless everybody's standing up. So we're sitting there. It's about halfway through their set. They're doing Jet City Woman, and Todd starts off the song in the center, and then he moves to stage left, like our right, and then he comes to stage right, and he's kind of way, way off the side, and he's singing the people over, and then he looks, and he sees me and Gordon. There's like three empty rows in front of us, nobody around us, and the two of us are just sitting in our seats, fist pumping and everything. And he points fingers at both of us, and then like thumbs up and just kind of walks away. I was like, hey, that's pretty cool. You know, like, gave us a nod from the stage. And, one of our other friends was a little bit further back, and he was actually taping that, or taping. Nobody tapes anything anymore. He was recording a video of that on his phone. So he posted it on Facebook later that night. I'm like, ah, about 3 minutes in, check it out. You can see the gesture. It's still there. So you know, I kind of got that part of the story too. I'm imagining now, you know, I having that kind of, I don't want to call it intimate because it wasn't really intimate, but it was just the two of us. I guess that would potentially make us more memorable as far as VIP crowds go.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah. You know, so I'm assuming if I bumped into them, I'm like, hey, how's it going? There may be some recognition. Yeah. So I don't know. I still might do this. I still might do it in December. It's $150 though. It's kind of steep, but, and I'm going to get the same shit I already got. So, but I don't know. We'll see.
So you, I mean, you have lots of concert adventures, and one of the regulars on this podcast might actually rival your adventures.
And, oh, he's surpassed me this year, I think.
Yeah, and we're obviously referring to young Dylan. I don't think a week goes by that we're not hearing about some of his adventures or misadventures
out there
in the world. What's that?
2 to 3 concerts a week.
Yeah.
I actually did the math. I've been to it'll be 18. I've been to 18 shows this year so far.
Just 18?
Dude, there's no way.
That seems a little light.
A couple weeks you went to like 4 shows in one day.
One of them was a peep show.
Whoa.
So Dylan, what have you been up to this week?
Well, just the other day, drove down to Jersey. Wow, Jesus Christ, I must be fucking tired. Drove down to South Jersey.
He's tired.
Tired.
Is that what?
South Jersey's Asbury Park area, right?
It wasn't that south. It was Holmdel, which is home to the PNC Bank Arts Center. Which I guess if you want to make the argument, it's Central Jersey, but I don't believe in Central Jersey. So pretty much like anything south of the oranges, that's South Jersey to me. So, but anyway, drove down to Red Bank first, met up with, our buddy Mott at Jay and Silent Bob Secret Stash so I could drop off, some Vashel Beer Club, cups to our, former guest Ming Chen and, his cohort Mike Zapsik. And they were very happy to have those. They were very impressed. I was wearing my Many Faces of Daryl shirt, and I was Ming the glass, and he was just like, you know, we were talking. He's like, oh, this is great. And he looks at it, he starts laughing. He goes, that shirt's fucking amazing. Where'd you get that? I'm like, oh, Edelston made it. And he's like, what the? He goes, how big is that guy's closet? Which I thought he was going to be like, what, how much time does that guy have in his hands? And I was just like, well, I've seen pictures of his closet. It's ridiculously large and mostly full of hockey jerseys. So anyway, I went in.
Well, no, you know what the better response would have been? Ming, you know all those designer jeans that you have in your closet? That's
yeah.
That's his hockey jerseys.
Yeah.
That's funny. When we went to go play poker that night, too, he came over to me, and I was wearing my Boba Fett hockey t-shirt.
Yeah.
And similar to the Stormtrooper one you have, Dylan.
Yeah.
And I wish I would have thought of that then, Mike, because he went, is that all you have is hockey apparel? And I was like, yeah, pretty much.
Well, now you have a line to use on him next time.
I definitely do.
Bust your chops. Probably, actually, the weekend of September 9th, 10th, and 11th when you come up here for Rock City Con and we see Ming and Mike up here in lovely Rochester, New York.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I will not be there.
Yeah, Dylan's being a surge.
Yeah, he is. He's like, I gotta work.
I do gotta work.
I know you do.
So, where was I? Oh, yeah, so met up with Mott. Then we drove up to the, and Red Bank's really, like, only about 12 minutes away from the PNC. So
yeah,
we just drove up.
I'd say it's that far.
Yeah, it's pretty close. So we just drove up and parked the cars, did some tailgating, you know, had some sandwiches, some beers. Obviously, Mott procured some contraband because that's what he does. and then I actually met up with some of my other friends who were there. We walked all, like, so PNC is an amphitheater, and there's a parking area. So, like, there's the main amphitheater, which has, like, kind of a little pavilion area that has like beer stands and food stands that kind of goes around it and on either side. And then there's an initial parking lot when you come in, and then there's an additional parking lot to the right, and then there's another one off to the left that's, like, out in these fucking woods. So my friend was all the way on the other side in the woods, so Matt and I walked about, I don't know, probably about a mile to get over there total. Meet up with him, we're hanging out, we're drinking, we walk back, get inside, we missed the opener, unfortunately. Matt and I grab some beers, we, you know, get to our seats, which weren't actually our seats, and I was like, Matt, we should probably go to our seats. He says, nah, fuck that, we'll just stay here, if someone tells us to move, we'll just move farther down.
Who was the opener?
It was Rival Sons again.
Yeah, they opened, okay, yeah, they opened here.
Yeah.
It was a good show.
I caught a couple of their songs the last tour. I didn't think they were bad, but I was okay with this album, so. Mm-hmm. So we got there, and we actually wound up getting... Oh my god, what?
So all in all, it was a good show?
What? I don't know what they're laughing at. Did you rip another one?
No!
No, but how long have you been talking about this now, Dylan?
Hello?
Have you mentioned at all who you actually went to see?
Well, Black Sabbath.
No, but nobody knows that but you at this point.
Oh, I thought I had mentioned it when I got off on this tangent. Wow, really? I thought I did. My bad.
I guess this part's getting edited.
That was classic. Who was the opener?
Oh my god, we've broken Jim.
Oh my god.
I did that on purpose, too.
I know you did. That's what made it. That's
I really thought I said something, though.
No.
I didn't. You should go take a look at the chat.
For all we know, you just hooked up with Mod at some random place.
I bet that.
I don't even. Oh, that's why. Hold on a second. Anyway,
there's the dismiss of fuck you guys.
We were there to see Black Sabbath.
Yeah, but nobody knew that. Except for us.
Well, now they do.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Sorry, everyone out there.
you just created a moment.
Good.
Man.
More of those.
To be fair, though, if you followed us on Instagram, you'd know where Dylan was.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's true.
Thanks, Dylan. I needed that.
But they were good. I don't think they played.
We just totally fucked your story.
I know. It doesn't really matter anymore. So, but it was actually the second time I was seeing them. I had talked about seeing them at MSG earlier in the year because I was like, fuck it, why not? What do I have to lose? Plus,
so
it's on my day
show
off.
So, prefer?
Huh?
Which show do you prefer?
I think they played Sweet Leaf at MSG and they didn't play it here, but I like this one. Just they were pretty much both comparable to one another.
Okay.
So,
I went in March at the Palace in Auburn Hills, where the Pistons play. Spent a ridiculous amount of money on the tickets, but we were off to the side of the stage, four rows up, and I was the furthest from the stage of the four of us that went. And I was
Were you stage left or right?
Tony's side, so stage left. And I was actually ahead of the people in the front row. I was that much closer to the stage. Like,
that's cool.
If he walked over, he was standing like right in front of me. And it was for that very reason. They're playing here Wednesday night at an amphitheater a little farther north from where we saw them the last time. And as much as I really, really want to go, I don't want to go. Because I think that was the sixth or seventh time I've seen them. It would be the seventh time. Seven's a lucky number. I'd never get that close again. And I don't want my last time seeing them to be like shitty seats at the back.
Yeah.
Like, so to me, it's March was my last show and they were phenomenal. Like guys in their 60s and they can still rock out in it. Oh, Ozzy sounded great. Like, Geezer just blows me away. Like, that dude's just amazing on the bass guitar. And, like, Tony, like, you know, those are, like, iconic classic riffs, you know? Like,
yeah.
And that sound, it's just nuts. And the drummer, what's his name, Tommy Cleophas?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, that dude can bash. Like, it's just nuts. Like, it would be way cool and much better to have Bill Ward there, but... You know, he was a pretty, from my perspective anyway, a pretty, pretty good fill-in. He definitely did the job. So.
I will say this though, Ozzy was a lot more maintained at this show than I saw him at MSG. Because at MSG, and I said this earlier, and I don't know, maybe you can confirm this. He kept doing this thing where he would like wander away from the mic stand for like, I don't know, he'd wander away about 5 or 6 feet, and then just immediately like. Jump back.
Yeah, that's Ozzy. He always did that.
No, he like barely did that at this show. Yeah. He did a lot of God Bless You All, so he might have.
Oh, he's always done that too.
Oh, he's always done that? All right.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it was something in his sex addiction rehab.
That's what I was thinking. Maybe he found Christ to get away from sex.
So, good time at the show, huh?
Oh, yeah, very good time at the show. It's good to hang out. We actually didn't wind up leaving. We didn't wind up leaving until, like, 11:30, because if you've ever been to a large concert event, you know that getting out of the parking lot usually sucks, so we just wound up, like, hanging for a while. I didn't feel like sitting in traffic for basically 45 minutes.
The sixth time I saw them was for the 13 tour.
That was when Brad Wilk was their drummer.
No, still the same guy.
Really? Because I could have sworn that Brad Wilk was their touring drummer drummer.
Bill Ward recorded, and Tommy Cleophas was the tour drummer. But I ended up at that show. I bought, they were selling signed CDs, and it was an extended edition of 13. So it was like about a 90-minute CD, I think. And outdoor... amphitheater venue with shitty parking, and I parked in the wrong spot, and I listened to that entire CD in my car in the parking lot and only moved about 70 yards. It was like the show ended at 10:45 or 10:55, and we didn't get out of the parking lot until almost 12:45.
Jeez.
It's crazy. Should have paid the $20 for VIP parking.
There you go. So Jim, what's been going on in your world? So, I mean, I know, just what, like, yesterday was a big day for you. It was birthday.
Yeah, I turned 42.
Oh, yeah. Happy birthday, man.
Yeah.
Oh,
happy birthday, Jim.
It's your hitchhiker's birthday.
Yep, exactly.
Happy birthday, you Sarge.
Yeah, dude, I tell you what, man. I remember when I was a little kid, I was probably maybe like 12 years old, and it was my dad's birthday, and I was like, it's your birthday. And you know how excited you get when you're a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And especially having a kid now, you know, you get the whole, you know, how big of a deal things can be or whatever. And, you know, like he was joking around with me at the time, and he's like, yeah, he goes, your birthdays are more important. Or I can't remember what he said, because our birthdays are like right by each other. Your birthday is more important to me. The older you get, you know, they're not as a big a deal or, you know, whatever. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, my God, how could a birthday not be a big deal? You know, you throw a party, you know, your relatives and friends come over, you get cake and ice cream and presents, and it's freaking awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, it's like, you know, like you said that, like, you know, yesterday, it's like, dude, I had already completely forgot about it. Like, it was like, you know, not that it's not cool and I didn't have a good day and all that stuff. Me and my daughter went to the Japanese steakhouse. It was a good dinner. Enjoyed that and everything. It just, you know, the things your parents tell you when you're younger that smack you in your head later on in life. You're like, holy shit, like, they were
damn
right.
Damn it, they were right.
Yep, them fuckers. They thought they didn't have shit. But, and it wasn't, he wasn't being a Sarge about it. It was more like, you know, just, again, like, I get it now because the things that surround my kid are way more important to me than stuff going on with me. Just, you know, I don't know, maybe it's because you're a kid and you get excited again for stuff for them. And, you know, like, my birthday was a complete non-event for me. I would have, you know, just rolled through it. But, you know, when it's a kid's birthday or something, you definitely get a lot more excited for stuff like that. But it was a good day, had a good time. You know, my evening was pretty pretty laid back. Like I said, we went to dinner and enjoyed. But Yeah, it was really good. 42. Still feel, sorry, don't feel, because I'm old and life sucks and aches and pains, but I still act like I'm probably 21 or younger, at least half my age.
I seem to recall you mentioning maybe some relatives came in for a visit, too.
Oh, yeah. This
Man, you're just reminding me. Jim's getting old.
Yeah, dude, you
talk I am apparently already Jim's personal calendar.
Yeah, no shit.
Past, present, and future.
Yeah, it was a rough week at work, too. I was burnt, but not that kind, just mentally burnt. Yeah, my cousin, who's actually born on August 24th, from New Hampshire, she came in for the week, and we actually got to go out and celebrate mine and her birthday on Wednesday. She left Thursday morning with my aunt and uncle to go back to New Hampshire, which my aunt and uncle from Florida, not her parents. She was here by herself. It was really cool with her being here because, you know, them being in New Hampshire, they only came in maybe once, twice at most a year or whatever, and it was usually around Christmas or something. So we had never gotten to celebrate our birthdays together, no matter even how close they were. So it was really nice.
Cool. I think it was rather appropriate with Paul on here and current Canadian events that we bring this next topic up, because I saw so many people questioning why this was an event. And I think it, with a Canadian correspondent on this episode, that it's only appropriate that we discuss Gord Downie and the Tragically Hip.
I like that. Canadian correspondent.
That'll be in my short bio for you on the website, Paul.
Oh, there you go. Well, I'm gonna ask you guys, what do you guys know about it? What's your take on it?
Well, and then, I mean, I know that the guy's sick. I recall when I was going to school in Buffalo that they were a pretty big band. I really didn't know any of their stuff or wasn't familiar with anything of theirs, but I knew that, like, in Buffalo and then obviously across the border, that they were pretty big, but I didn't have any idea of really anything about them or what type of music they played or anything like that. I know some of the rock stations would play their stuff, but I didn't really have a full knowledge of really anything about them.
Yeah.
I don't know a goddamn thing about the Tragically Hip at all.
Dylan, that's disappointing and unfortunate. I think you need to go educate yourself. I honestly think you would dig them.
Here's my take on it. I had made a post about how every single one of my Canadian friends, like, feed or, you know, posts on Facebook was about the Tragically Hip. But really more about how, like, you know, sad and tragic it was, no pun intended. I have nothing against this band. I think...
Oh, no, no, I'm not saying that. If you haven't heard them, you can't, can't be for or against them, right? So.
No, and what little I saw from it was just... I can't even think of the last time something like that happened in the States where, I mean, an entire channel was shut down, like basically shut down just to air or broadcast their performance. No commercials,
no commentary.
No commentary, no breaks, you know, no sponsors. Potentially what, like thousands, maybe millions of dollars worth of like commercial airtime like lost, but fuck it. Like it's Canada's, you know, boys.
It was Saturday night, day 14 of the Olympics. And CBC was the network for the Olympics in Canada here this year. And they paused their primetime Olympic coverage to play a concert in an arena that only holds 7,000 people. It was in their hometown of Kingston. They did two shows in Toronto at the Air Canada Centre. So everything sold out. This entire tour, 15 shows in like a month and a half, sold out within minutes. Ticketmaster's fault, just their bot protection was not working very well, and scalpers got most of the tickets, and people were getting ridiculously ripped off when it comes to buying some of these aftermarket tickets. But like an entire tour sold out in minutes, and I had nothing against the United States, and like you said, you don't think you couldn't remember a time this ever has happened before. To be honest, I don't think it would. I don't think there's a band in the U.S. that would garner the same sort of nationalistic everybody coming together. Like, not everybody here loves this band. I have friends that hate them. But that being said, the Canadian way is like, hey, I'm still going to watch it. You know, it's like this is it was a national happening, and it was pretty cool. I didn't watch it at home. I went with a friend of mine, Tony. We went to a place called the Windsor Beer Exchange, and they were having like a Tragically Hip night. They had actually a beer called the Tragically Hop. It was from Craft Heads, another local craft brewery, and it was probably an IPA, I guess. And they even had a dry hop infuser attached to the draft line with like 10 or 15 different types of hops. And they were running this through that very, very hoppy beer. They had people like an open mic night before the show started. We got there about 7:30, and for an hour, people would just get up and jam and playing. They're playing nothing but Tragically Hip songs. And at 8:30, they shut off the PA for the bands. They had a projector. They turned that on. The TVs were already on CBC because we were listening to music and watching the Olympics. And the only person that spoke in the 3 hours of that entire broadcast was Gord Downie. Nobody else. None of the other band members, like you said, there was no commentary. There was not a single interruption for 3 hours on a Saturday prime time is just unfucking believable. The population of Canada is just under 36 million. They released the numbers this week. Any idea how many people tuned in?
28.
Yeah, it wasn't that high, but
17.
11.7. Like, wow. Could you imagine a third of the United States stopping to watch anything? Or any other country. And I'm not saying this as it's not a negative to any other country. I think it's just, it completely describes what this country's like to a T. Like, that's the sort of stuff that we just gravitate into that kind of shit, right? And, you know, I'm at a bar watching a broadcast of a concert, and it was like being there. Everybody in the bar clapped when every song finished. We were all singing along, you know, there was a couple of moments. There's a song they have off one of their early albums called Grace 2. And there's been video, kind of popping up on the internet of the end of that song. And it was the one and only time he lost it during the whole performance. Some people are questioning, like, is it legitimate? Like, did he really, really lose it just because he seems to recover from it so quickly? But I've watched a couple of times, and it's pretty painful. I'm getting a lump in my throat even describing it. He tears up and he screams into the microphone two or three times and drops the mic, walks away. And, you know, like, it's a dude that's been doing this, fuck, 35 years, maybe.
I thought it was pretty powerful. Like,
I mean, consider that, like, he's basically coming to terms with the fact that, like, his life is going to end.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that clip, that particular clip, though, I thought was incredibly powerful.
Yeah, and did you think it was staged? No. I don't. No. I think that's absolutely just raw emotion. That's my opinion. And that was the one and only time he cracked. You know, his voice was, you know, he's had, it's inoperable, so they can't take the tumor. It's a brain tumor. I know he's had some surgery, though, and he's been on, like, chemo and radiation and stuff like that. So he was frail, and, you know, the voice wasn't 100%, but, like, who gives a fuck, you know? It's like, sure. To go out like that and go out on your own, you know, your own terms and stuff was a really, really cool thing to do. Yeah.
So to the uninitiated, and I'll include myself in this, how would you describe their music? What would you equate it to?
It's definitely rock. It's a little folksy. There's a lot of Canadiana to it. Like, there's the opening song of the entire show was called 50 Mission Cap, and it's about a guy who played for the Toronto Maple Leafs in the 50s. Name's Bill Barilko, and he scored. Actually, the line in the song goes, "The last goal he ever scored won the Leafs the cup."
they wouldn't win another till 1962, the year he was discovered. And he scored that goal. The Maple Leafs win the cup. I think it was like 1950. And he goes on a fishing trip and disappears. And his body wasn't discovered for like 12 years or something like that. 1962, you know, they find his body, and that's the next time the Leafs win. There's the song Courage. It's a parenthetical title. I can't remember the guy's name, but it's about, another dude. There's a famous case, in the 90s, this guy named David Milgaard. He lived out in the prairies. I can't remember if it was Manitoba or Saskatchewan. He was imprisoned, wrongly, and he was cleared on DNA evidence in the 90s. And there's a song about him. I can't remember the name of this, the title now. It's escaping me, but you know, there's just little bits of Canada, in a lot of the songs. There's a town in Northern Ontario called Bob Cajun, and there's a song called Bob Cajun. They shut down an entire street and broadcast it, you know. So a lot of people lived in that area, like, hey, let's go to Bob Cajun to see the last Tragically Hip show, you know. And they even did a song called New Orleans is Sinking, which has one of the coolest lines in any song I've ever heard. It's like, let's see if I can find the lyric for a second here. So I won't do it justice if I'm doing it.
I mean, are there any bands that you would kind of equate it to that people would be familiar with, like kind of genre or style wise?
I'm trying to, like, it's guitar based. They have a like dual guitar, but not overly heavy. Like, I don't know. It's hard to peg. I'm trying to think of like an equivalent. I don't know. Give me some time to think about it. I'm like, but yeah, it's like, you know, he said, there's a line here, he said, I had my hands down in the river, my feet back up on the banks, looked up to the Lord above and said, hey man, thanks. You know, it's the chorus is like, my memory's muddy. What's this river that I'm in? New Orleans is sinking, man, and I don't want to swim. It's just kind of cool. It's got a nice groove to it. You know, it's like, I don't know. Genre wise, it's hard to say. I'd say, do yourselves a favor and look up some of the hits for sure. Like, you know, they're worth a listen. You know, a lot of people that don't like them don't like Gord's voice. There's the organ. Great guitar riff.
Just listening to that, just like, what, about 45 seconds?
Yeah.
That almost has like that, like mid-90s to late-90s, like blues rock type vibe to it.
Yeah.
You know, in that vein of like a Kenny Wayne Shepherd type.
Yes, yeah, that song for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's kind of got that bluesy thing.
Yeah.
It's like,
you know what the coolest part about it, or one of the coolest parts, was when the fucking Prime Minister came out.
Oh, when he's walking down the street?
Yeah, or... I was like, the fucking Justin Trudeau just like walks us out and just like gives him a hug.
Will that guy's approval ratings go through the roof for a brief moment or what?
A little bit. a lot of people are not overly thrilled at him either. Yeah. Like,
well, just for a little bit. Like, they were just like, you know, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think.
I saw a lot of people giving him props.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, like there's a little bit of Canadiana in all of their stuff. Eddie Vedder, Pearl Jam was playing in Chicago on Saturday night, and Eddie Vedder actually stopped.
A little,
yeah,
a little
and
tribute.
That was like one of the classiest things I've ever seen. Like, you know, and you know, why wouldn't they know of each other? I'm sure they've crossed paths before, you know, different festivals and stuff. And
yeah.
I think he said in his tribute that they'd recorded some stuff in Seattle, so that's where they kind of bumped into them. But, you know, that's really, really cool. Geddy Lee had some comments, the bass player, singer from Rush, and he said just how, you know, like Gord's lyrics, like it's almost like, you know, he's like a poet laureate, right? There's a lot of, you know, like I said, it's just all about, you know, meaningful things, like things that have gone on historically, you know, just documenting current events or just even silly little things, but things that are, you know, just part of the culture and part of the, you know, how people are up here. So the guy who was imprisoned falsely, that song's called Wheat Kings, and it's the total opposite of like a bluesy rock song. It's a pretty mellow tune. You know, they're kind of all over the place. They got a jam band sound sometimes, and other times it's more like just a melodic rock sound. But
so I was just gonna play a little bit of the one that, like, when he had that little breakdown.
Oh, Grace 2, that's a brilliant song. Yeah. Great bass riff too.
I remember hearing that, like, that hook, like, at the end of it, when you were doing it off screen. Got long at opening. Yeah, it's got definitely
that that almost sounds a little bit like The Cure.
I was going to almost say more of like a 90s-ish vibe to it than anything. Yeah.
Yeah, that song is from the 90s too, I think. So. Speculation is that's about a guy picking up a prostitute.
Yeah, I mean, man, it's amazing to see how much coverage that got, like, just overall, like, not only, you know, obviously in Canada, but, like, you know, across the states. I couldn't believe how many people were talking about it and going, what is this all about? And it was really kind of neat. And having known a little bit about the band, but not a whole lot, it was kind of interesting to just kind of, like, maybe do a little bit of research on them and go, hey, you know what? I mean, it was funny, like, hearing or reading some things, like, where people are like, man, this was, like, the biggest band that never made it in the States.
Yes. Yeah, and I think that's what a lot of Canadians kind of glom onto that a little bit too. It's like, you know, they're ours. Fuck everybody else. You know what I mean? Like, and in a way, it's kind of sad for them because they could have maybe made a little bit more money, but they haven't been hurting up here either. Like, everything they put out is just, I think, gold album after gold album, right? You know, it's. Yeah. And they've been doing it since the, you know, the 90s, like, or late 80s, early 90s. Grace 2, that song, was from 1994, right?
Yeah, that kind of fits that era.
Yeah.
Just the vibe of it.
But yeah, it's, I don't know, it's something I'm never going to forget. I've seen them live twice, both times in Detroit. Once was in a town a little bit north of Detroit called Royal Oak. It's only about 10 miles from downtown. In a theater, like maybe a couple thousand people, and there was I wasn't married, but I was engaged. So Anne and I went, my brother and two of my brother's friends, and my brother and his friends got right up front. It was like a general admission show, and this is one of those theaters where there's no seats anymore. They've kind of leveled everything.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have like a flat spot for about 25, 30 feet. Then it goes up a couple of steps and they kind of do it that way. So we were on the second level, right on the front. So we had nobody in front of us. We could see directly over everybody's head. Stage was only 30 feet away. So it wasn't like we had a long way to look. But my brother and his friends were like right up front, like second row. And there's a song, this back in the early 90s, but there's a song called Blow It High Dough, and it starts off pretty mellow. It's got a kind of a lilting bass line to it, and even the vocals are kind of mellow, and it's like, I think it goes something like, they shot a movie once in my hometown, everyone was in it from miles around. And then there's a couple more lines, and then he says, and I can get behind anything. And then the guitar just kicks in, it's like, and this whole theater just starts bouncing. Like, they go from this, like, swaying little lilt to everybody's just jumping up and down. And, you know, we're all kind of getting, ooh, this is cool, you know. Show ends. We wait for my brother and his friends to come back. And I said, I'm like, how the fuck cool was that? We, like, blew it high dough. How it was just mellow and everybody started jumping. And my brother looks at me and goes, it would have been much better if my feet were on the ground. It was that many people packed in that he got squished up and his feet weren't even touching, but he was still being bounced up and down, which would kind of freak me out, I think. But
yeah, maybe a little.
Yeah. And then I saw him a couple of years later at Kobo Arena, the iconic arena on the back of the Kiss Alive album. And that was in the 90s, and I hadn't seen them since. And when, like, this tour was announced, part of me is like, oh, man, I got to go see this. And then I thought, oh, maybe I don't want to. Like, I don't think emotionally, I don't know if I would have been able to stand there. I was like, I didn't really lose it at the bar. I had a couple of moments where I was like, I got a lump in my throat and I had to dab my nose a couple of times because it was running. I didn't full on cry, but there was a lot of sad people out that night. And
sure,
I don't know if I could have stood in a crowd and witnessed that to actually be there. I think it would have been pretty tough. I get a little empathetic sometimes, and like, I, you know, if people are sad, it just makes me sad. And I, as cool as an experience I think it would have been, I just think it would have killed me. So I'm kind of glad I didn't. There was pictures of like groups of people just hugging each other. People who didn't even know each other would just turn around and like, you know, it was, everybody was happy and sad at the same time. And it was like a third of this country all doing that. Like, right. That's mind blowing to me. Like, I don't know. It's just, instead, it's something I'll never forget. It's an experience for the life, you know. It's just cool that people could put aside any other bullshit for 3 hours too. You know, there was nothing meant to those people that were watching it. Nothing meant anything other than just to watch that. You know, for that it was pretty cool too. I was like. And I hope my comments like don't alienate any Americans. I don't mean it from as a negative sense. About America. I think it's more. It describes what this country is.
I'm sure Dylan's offended.
And what makes this country, right?
Don't worry, Paul. If anything, Americans do everything in their power to alienate themselves from other countries.
No, I'm talking about like your listeners. Like, who the fuck's this Canadian ass? What's he talking about?
Listeners? Yeah, we don't have any of those, dude.
You've got a few. Come on. So
suddenly, Liz is just like, oh, God, fucking tragically hip.
But you know, like, my brother's a huge fan. Jim's
BBQ podcast.
No, the hip. I think my brother's even heard of you guys.
I was hopeful for a second.
I'm a casual fan in the sense that I know some of the songs. I don't know all of them, but
right.
It's just one of those things. You just kind of had to go and just sort of experience. You know, it was pretty fucking cool.
So. Yeah. I'm glad we could get like a perspective of it, like of somebody that
that
it would have that much more meaning to. You know, I mean, even though, like you were saying, like you're a casual fan,
yeah.
As you heard, I mean, I know of them, but I couldn't tell you a song.
I'm trying to think of an American equivalent, like not from a genre, but from just like who would garner that much attention. Like, there probably are the biggest band here. So who's the biggest?
Don't let the Rush fans hear you say that.
Well,
yeah, right.
You know what?
But Rush caught on in the States. That's the difference.
And not all over the place.
Not all over the place.
With what you're describing, I'm almost thinking, and
I was going to say Springsteen. But
that's what was coming to my mind as well. Like, so
Springsteen would be a good one. Or I was almost thinking, like, just because of the style, the music, like almost REM in a way.
Yeah, a little bit. His voice is very similar to Michael Stipe's.
Maybe it helps. I mean, his look is kind of very similar to Michael Stipe, yeah. So maybe that's why I went there.
I was thinking more, not so much for genre, but just for like popularity and the types of. Although I guess no, REM fits that mold too for the types of song. Like Springsteen's a storyteller. I'm going to go on record and say I'm not a huge fan. I don't get him. But I can see why people do. And, you know, he does 3-hour shows. They do 3-hour shows, you know.
Right.
The songs are, you know, if you're going to go back to ancient history, they're like the modern day bards, right? Like they're telling the stories of the nation.
Sure.
So let's use that as an example. So, you know, not that I want to wish anything ill on Bruce Springsteen, but say he comes up in a similar circumstance. And it's happened already this year with even how, if you look at David Bowie, he knew, he chose not to do anything about it as far as being public. He instead went out and recorded an album that was released, 2 days before he died, detailing what he went through. And that's how he handled it. And that's sort of cool. But like, so if something similar happened to Springsteen, do you see 100 million people? Like, does NBC cut in the middle of the Olympics without a commercial? They couldn't get like 10 minutes through the opening ceremonies without going to a commercial. Like, I just don't see it happening. And I'd love for somebody to prove me wrong, but like, even as big as Springsteen is, I don't see a third of the people tuning in to watch.
That's the other thing. Yeah. I mean, you might be able to do something like that where you pull like a no commercial interrupted broadcast, but would a third of the U.S. population actually tune in for it? Probably not.
And it's maybe it's just because I was going to say because the country's too big, but we're bigger, right?
Yeah.
Population, you're bigger, but we landmass, we are bigger. That being said, most people live within 100 miles of the U.S. border, so the population dispersion is pretty thin across this country. And of those 35 million people, like six or eight of them live around Toronto. So it's not as, you know, as vast as you'd think. I would have bet a good chunk of the viewers were mostly from Ontario, but we're also almost a third of the population to begin with. The other thing too, if you crunch those numbers, that 35 million is everybody. Well, most of the people watching this are going to be in the, like, I'd say 30 to 50 range, right?
Yeah.
Like, my mom watched for a little bit, just because there was nothing else on, but she was interested in it from a, what'd you call it?
Like a historical point of view.
Yeah, like, maybe not so much the history of it, but like the
cultural aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. The cultural. I was trying to think of the anthropological point of view, right? Not that she's an anthropologist, but that's kind of what it fits into, right? So.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's apart from describing what I saw, I don't know if I could put it into how I felt about it other than it was just something I don't think I'll ever forget, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a pretty bit of a downer of a subject.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. No pun intended there with his last name, but I mean, we could keep talking music because it just seems like this is a very music-centric episode of the podcast this evening. All right, boys. Well, I think we're going to put a bookmark right here on episode 31. We'll come back in with Mr. Paul Saunders for episode 32, and you'll get all your favorite segments. You'll get your insecurity questions. You'll get your Sarge of the Week. You'll get some more music talk. We'll talk a little bit about Metallica and their new single. It's actually a really good hour and change worth of talk with Mr. Saunders.
Our Canadian correspondent.
Yes, our Canadian correspondent. Everybody that I've told about that absolutely loves that we're referring to him as the Canadian correspondent. But before we go, you know, we were talking just a little bit ago before we started recording about, you know, amateur podcasting. And I was listening to this radio show today, and they were complaining about how how there's all these amateur podcasters doing these shows, and how it just sounds so like just cliche and just, you know, not
like lame,
lame, and like people shouldn't be doing that. If they want to talk, they should just talk. And you know what? I got to disagree with that, because, you know, we do this. We don't necessarily do this to gain any sort of notoriety or fame. We do this because we like chatting with each other and we like sharing it with people. We think that, you know, the people that do listen enjoy it. They get a kick out of it. They like what we have to say. But, you know, fuck that, man. I think we get a kick out of it, you know, and I love doing it, man. I love putting things together and doing this with you guys. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but that's where I'm at.
I feel exactly the same way. And those people, they can go, you know what? They can go screw.
They can go fuck themselves.
Yeah, fuck them. And fuck you, whoever it was.
Yeah, I can't even remember the guy's name. That's how memorable it was, you know?
That's all right. Because you know what? No one's going to remember who we are either.
Wait a minute. How could anybody define a professional podcaster? That makes no sense.
Hey, no, it does totally make sense, Jim. I mean, like, if you're doing it and you're making some money off of it, like you're getting advertisement dollars and whatnot, that's fine. That's great. You know, like the Nerdist of the world, the, you know,
right.
The
but even Christo, like, and that was going to be the example I used was Nerdist. He just started out doing crap like we do.
Well, yeah, I mean. But he's got a little bit more of a name and behind it, and or Mark Maron or any of those guys, you know, or who's the other dude there?
Kevin Smith,
or who's the guy? Adam Carolla.
My point is none of those guys ever did it before, and they used it as a medium to just go talk themselves. It wasn't like
do for fun, you know.
Right. It's not like it's been around forever and they're like, I'm gonna go become a professional podcaster. That's what I'm gonna do for a living.
Right. But you know what? I think where we're headed at is eventually maybe Dylan will be able to cross that border into Canada, and when that border agent asks him if he has a job, Dylan go, yes, I am the social media coordinator for a podcast. Right, Dylan?
Yeah, but he's just gonna be like, that's his bullshit job. you are petty shit.
You are nothing.
you are nothing. And now I will break you. Like, what? And then he just picks me up and smashes me over his knee.
Did I miss something that you're Russian?
Do you not remember the border guard guy?
Yeah, but he wasn't fucking Russian.
We don't know what he was.
He was like some unidentifiable like European accent man. He was probably a former hockey player that just got a job as like a security guard at the airport.
Exactly.
It's Yuri Kasplakian.
What airport?
I flew into Canada one time,
wasn't it up in Toronto?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about something else. I'm on board now.
Jesus, man.
I thought you guys were talking about
42-year-old senioritis is taking over, you know?
I thought you guys were talking about the guy that you got your Canada-do's and Canada-don'ts.
No. Oh, boy.
Jim's getting old, like this podcast ending.
Yes. All right, well, Dylan, as that border guard is breaking you over his knee, you can remind him if he wants to check out us on Facebook, that social media app that you so much love to post all of our updates on. He can check us out at facebook.com/JimsBBQPod.
And I'll be sure to stammer out as my spine breaks through my stomach so he can follow us on Twitter at JimsBBQPod and take pictures of my broken insides, post them on Instagram, and tag at JimsBBQPod in the pictures.
Jim?
I'm reveling in Dylan's whatever that was, diatribe, I guess. That was well done. If you'd like to hashtag DIAD to JimsBBQPod, you can send that to JimsBBQPod@gmail.com, or you can get the episodes.
Hashtag Dylan is a dick?
Yes!
I was like, dyad? What the fuck is that? And I'm like, oh, Dylan is a dick.
I just figured that Jim had no idea how to spell diatribe.
That's even better, but no, Dylan is a dick.
He spelled something else. He's like, I think this is it.
Yeah, it's Dylan is a dick. God. But you can also get the episodes fresh from the grill at jimsbbqpod.com under episodes.
And with Dylan's last breath, he will ask that border guard to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes.
Just remember, people, one like equals one prayer for Dylan.
Dylan, we're all praying for you. Even Annie is praying for you. She's right here.
But not me.
Ha ha ha.
It's me, Yuri. Your friend is dead. You have new co-host.
Uh-oh. All right, boys. Well, we'll see everybody for episode 32, where we'll continue on with Mr. Paul Saunders. Bye-bye. Hope you all enjoyed.
I know I did. Well, thank you for listening to Jim Barbecue, where meat grills you!